All right, welcome everyone. Hey, panelists, can you give me a thumbs up if you can hear me okay? All right, guys, thank you very much. Hey, thank you everybody for joining us. And just a real quick background on this three-part panel. Hopefully you've had a chance to watch the first two that we've done. We kicked this off 2 weeks ago, talking about privacy. Last week, we talked through cybersecurity, and we thought we'd wrap this up with a pretty interesting topic, and that's really about governance systems. So, you know, frameworks are going to come up in this session, and you know, a lot of folks on this call can't have a discussion about frameworks without, of course, COBIT coming up. So we thought it'd be nice to share this discussion with you. I'll introduce the panelists here in just a minute, but the topic today is IT governance systems. So these global pandemics do not stop IT governance. They really expose the need to change it. And a couple of things I think that are really important here when we talk about IT governance. I had a discussion with a client, this was probably about a week and a half ago, and they were going down the path of digital transformation and high velocity IT. And this executive said, oh, well, we're a high velocity IT environment. Those governance and assurance models, they're meaningless to us. And I really thought that's incredible that somebody would think that you could have a deployment style that is immune from a governance system. So of course, that and many other topics similar to that are gonna be coming up here in the next couple of slides. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the panel next. But first, you guys see, this is the last of the three webinars that we've done. And this is the IT governance system webinar. So let's talk about this. Hey guys, I'm sure you recognize most, if not all of my colleagues here today. We truly have a global panel for this series. And you can see, we all have very specific deep skills in each of their crafts. By the way, this is an unsponsored event. We are all here as colleagues sharing information with you. And our goal is to share thoughts and ideas with you. And there's no commercial break or no selling you anything. Now, can you keep in touch with everybody? Of course, at the end of this webinar, or through chat, you can chat with any one of the panelists, get their information, and continue any conversation with anybody here that would help you create value for your enterprise. So let's take a look. I was thinking about my opening remarks for today's panel, and it reminded me that just last week, I learned many things from many of my colleagues. And so I want to introduce them here, and I'll make this quick because I have a feeling that we have a lot of content to cover today. My name is Mark Thomas. I'm in Kansas, USA. I'll be your host and moderator for this event. Ramses is from Spain. What I remember from Ramses, he said last week, the book has been written. And I thought that was appropriate, not just in the last session, but it's appropriate to kick off this session as well. We've got Alan from London, UK. Whatever the subject, Alan always will say, and I agree with him, that it's paramount to know the critical business objectives and always invest in people's skills. I think that is awesome. Dirk, we have from Belgium. Now, Dirk couldn't make it last week, but he's definitely here this week. And this topic is governance systems. So, you know, like I said, frameworks will come up. And just so you guys know, we have the pleasure of having Dirk, the global expert on a framework you may all have heard of, and it's called COBIT. So we look forward to hearing from Dirk. Ed is from the USA. He's coming from Ohio. One of my favorite quotes from Ed so far, and it is appropriate for every one of these. He said, be prepared to defend the decisions you make during the pandemic. We have Veronica coming to us from Kenya. What she has said, which I really liked, she said, let us not forget fatigue risk. Our systems are stressed, our networks are stressed, and our users are stressed. So always think about that fatigue stress there. We have Elaine coming to us. He's from France, but he's talking to us from the Ivory Coast. He made the critical suggestion that we must be keen to assigning the right responsibilities and accountabilities to the right roles, regardless of whether we're talking privacy, cybersecurity, or governance frameworks. Opiemi comes to us from Nigeria. I really like what Opiemi said last week. He stressed the culture of continual improvement. His quote, he said, if you are not intentionally improving, then you are unintentionally declining. Wow, great quote. Dr. Ramsey comes to us from Jordan. He's our cybersecurity guy, and he stresses that the risks and attacks are becoming more sophisticated. Therefore, our systems must be able to adapt to those. Next, we have Dina, also from the country of Jordan. What Dina was telling us last week is that we, during privacy, cybersecurity, and even governance systems, it's more important now than ever because we're working from home and our policies, our procedures, and our frameworks are more important now than they've ever been. And then finally, we have Kaya coming from Turkey. I've learned many things about governance in Turkey. Notably, last week, he told us about something called patron companies. Never heard of this in my life. And how these can shape the landscape of a region's privacy and cybersecurity landscapes. All right, for these and more quotable quotes from these guys, take a look at the series we put together for you. We'll give you more information when we're finished up today on how to catch each one of these episodes. So let's move on. Couple of ground rules here. Please use the Q&A section. Like we said before, if you have a question for a specific panelist, just put their name in that question so that panelist can kind of keep an eye on that. If not, then generally we'll try to address all those questions, but because of time, we might not be able to get to every one of those things. Of course, you guys know we record these. We'll give you information on where to find that information coming up. All right, guys. Well, I think we're ready to go. You don't want to hear me do any more introductions. We have put together several very, very good questions that I think are really, really important when we're talking about IT governance systems. So here's my first question to our panelists. Some recent articles have indicated that current IT governance systems and frameworks are no longer viable. Would you agree with this? And what changes should our industry consider going forward? I'm going to kick it off with Ramses first. Ramses, you want to give some thinking on that?
Oh, sure, Mark, and thank you for having me. Welcome, everyone. It's truly a pleasure to be on the third webinar of the series. But I think that to your question, I mean, they are no longer viable, Mark, as long as they have lost sight of what I call business first, business first, business first. And when you finish, business first. Actually, that's the goal of everything. I mean, governance systems, framework, best practices. Okay, you can put the name on everything on that, but it's business first. So they are no longer viable, especially in this post-pandemic epoch. If you lose sight of protect employees, protect revenue, of course, this is a for-profit world mainly. So I mean, if you lose sight of what's important, if you lose sight on the definition of governance, and everybody, I'm assuming, knows it, but let me go back very rapidly on that, is setting a strategic direction, making sure that objectives are met, ascertaining that the risks are managed, and ascertaining of ensuring the responsible use of resources. If your framework, if your best practice is no longer into these four dimensions, strategy, tactics, risk management, and value delivery or performance management, then yes, it's no longer viable. So as a start, business first, business first, business first. If not, yes, it's no longer valid. You need to change the approach. But if they are focused into that, protect people, protect employee, protect revenue, protect benefits, protect, you know, the value to shareholders and stakeholders, then you're in the right spot. That would be my intro.
Agree with you on that. And in fact, I have a feeling Alan Boardman has a comment on this one. Alan, any thoughts here?
Yeah, and again, thanks for having me. Really great to be here. Totally agree with Ramses on business first, business first, business first. But if we just kind of look at some of the criticisms that have been levied against governance, and you know, even before we went into this pandemic, you know, it's cumbersome, it's too kind of prescriptive, it weighs us down. And in the new agile world, why should we have all these kind of rules and regulations and all that stuff weighing us down? In the pandemic, it's become even more important to have good governance. And I mean, I think we're seeing some examples of those where, you know, companies are really struggling, and without having that really embedded governance within their processes, their organization, they are falling short. So, you know, I would say it's become even more important. And, you know, moving into cloud and automation, although you really have to have good governance principles and practices in your organization.
Maybe I can add a few words to that. I, of course, agree with Ramses and Alan that governance should, first of all, be concerned with what is important for the business. And as a little side remark, whoever came up with the term GRC that we are all very familiar with, I can't think of any punishment harsh enough for that person. I mean, GRC is such a bad thing. It associates governance with, most people say, compliance and risk, and it reduces the scope of a governance system to a compliance, a bureaucratic compliance exercise. And if the executive you were talking about, Mark, earlier, had that sort of governance system, then he's probably right. But that's not the governance system that we intended it to be. And we'll talk later about COVID and other governance systems. Compliance and bureaucracy is not their main purpose. Unfortunately, that's the way it's implemented in many places, but that's not the way we want it to be. So yes, governance systems, the good ones, are more than ever viable and needed.
I think that makes sense. And I think when we talk about that, I've got a question coming up, Dirk, that I would like for you to expand on that comment here in just a couple of seconds. But I have a follow-up to one of the things that we just talked about. So we talked earlier about performance and conformance in earlier webinars. Do you guys envision any new global standards or new global regulations that are emerging due to this pandemic that could influence any future governance systems? Now with this, I'm going to jump over to Turkey and Nigeria because you guys have a unique perspective when it comes to, you know, performance and conformance. Kaya, we'll start with you.
I think the biggest thing that I see with governance standards and systems, at least the experience we had in Turkey, the bank regulator mandated that all banks implement COBIT. And they said, by God, when I was giving them COBIT trainings, I said, hey, don't force the banks to implement all of it. Ask them to adopt it to their needs. And they didn't want to do that. So all banks had to implement all 34 COBIT processes, even if they didn't have that process present. So I think the concept of resiliency, of changing demands and needs, is really important. A one-size-fits-all governance system is very challenging to implement on a broad brush globally. I think it's very important to adopt the portions of the governance system that matter. One example that I'm seeing is an IT strategy committee is something that's really developing. In the last year or two, we're getting a lot more large organizations implementing strategy committees. Everybody's had IT steering committees to manage IT projects and to follow up on them. But the concept of reviewing IT technology and seeing what aspects of it we can adopt to our business to better support the business is a powerful one, and one that I'm seeing more pickup on locally.
All right, that's awesome. Actually, we got a question out there. So what do you think about maturity of African companies in IT governance? But on this question, let's go to Africa. Let's go to Nigeria. Opiemi, what's your thinking here?
Yeah, our experience is similar to Kaya's. Turkey's experience, we had the Central Bank of Nigeria also mandated the banks to implement COBIT. They even told them to implement it to maturity level 3. The question is, why should I do something that is not adding value to me? Whatever at cost without adding value is a waste. And I like this quote by Peter Drucker: there's nothing as useless as doing efficiently what needs not to be done at all. So you see people doing very well what they don't need to have done at all. But as long as value creation remains the objective for governance, as long as we need to create value for stakeholders, we need governance systems framework to drive that, because we need to be able to do that in a systematic, methodical manner so that we can have predictable outcomes, you know, to ensure the benefit realization objectives, risk optimization objectives, resource optimization objectives. Thank you.
Makes a lot of sense. So we talked about legislation, we talked about compliance. So let's go to Jordan, right? We heard that Turkey has actually created some legislation around requiring COBIT. Anything similar to that taking place in Jordan? And do you envision anything new based on the pandemic? Let's go to Ramsey, Dr. Ramsey next.
Yeah. Hi, Mark. Eventually, in 2 years ago, the Central Bank of Jordan has published a new regulations that mandates all the banks in Jordan to comply with COVID-5 eventually. And recently, in 2019, Bank of Jordan was the first, I think, bank in the Middle East region that requests all the banks to migrate from COVID-5 to COVID-2019, covering all phases of COVID-2019. Which is to implement the processes from level one up to level three, conduct an annual design for the processes, and annual studies should be submitted to the central bank, covering all the process objectives with the priority based on the bank IT strategy and management vision as well. In addition to that, I think goals cascade exercise was also has been requested, and continuous follow-ups assessment and tracking for the banking industry was mandated at that time.
Makes a lot of sense. Anybody else have any other perspective on this one before we moved into our next question?
I'd like to just clarify something. The first regulation about IT control in Turkey mandated COVID compliance. The bank regulator just renewed that regulation, and they no longer mandate a specific compliance with a specific regulatory framework. When we asked them why, their response is, you know, we don't want to be tied into a single organization's view of the world, which I think is a very strong statement, okay? I think COBIT is a great example of a framework that I think was really strong in its first versions. And I think COBIT 5, there were aspects of COBIT 5 that I think didn't work, that I thought were very difficult to implement, primarily the capability model. I think COBIT 19 has become, is gone back to the original kind of logic of the previous version's maturity model, and it's a much more powerful framework as a result. So unfortunately, the process of publicizing COBIT-5 with the new capability model, I think it lost a lot of traction globally, is my experience. So it's great to have a governance framework and a system, but we need to be flexible, because all respect to Dirk and the team that worked on it, sometimes the people that write the frameworks can miss things.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just come in there, Mark, very quickly. My panelists make some really good points, but the two that really jump out at me is the fact that GRC unfortunately ties governance to compliance. Yes, there is an element of compliance in there, but it's much, much richer. And, you know, organizations really need to step up and understand that it could really help them. And the other one is adopt and adapt. You know, you don't implement the whole thing because that's just going to cause you problems down the road. And maybe we can learn some lessons from those organizations or countries that have tried to do that. I mean, I think there are some case studies that need to be written on this and, you know, the pitfalls to avoid. But really, it's all about adopt and adapt. I think that's what Ramses was saying. So I totally agree with that.
I think you're right. And you know what's interesting is when you talk GRC, notice R is right in the middle. Risk is between governance and compliance. And that might be for a reason. So let's finish up on Africa. Let's go down to Elaine. Elaine, you have some comments on this one.
Yeah, I completely agree with what has been said. And I would talk about the problem of compliance and maturity. In Africa and in France, in French-speaking country, generally, the enterprises are only implementing things when it's mandatory. So it means when it's a compliance requirement. So what I see there is that, of course, we don't have a lot of usage of such frameworks in the enterprises because of the lack of maturity, the lack of money probably also. And they don't have understood at all that a framework needs to be adapted and you don't have to implement everything. Just a very short anecdote. 2 weeks ago, I had a training with a huge company here in Ivory Coast, and I had the CIO in my training. He attended all the courses and so on. And then I received a request for proposal from this company. They said, hey, look, guy, we need you to help us to implement the 37 processes of COVID-5 and to write the 7 policies which are behind. And you have 3 months and we have a budget of 30,000 euro. I said, okay, I don't have time to waste. So it means you don't have understood what it is. And the point is, when you put a framework with compliance, generally people think they need to be compliant with each of the statements which are in the framework. So my point is, of course, compliance is very important because it can be a driver to implement a framework, to implement a governance system, but it's not a question of compliance. It's more a question of creating value, and this is the point. It's a question of maturity of the enterprise, and as we said last week, it's a question of culture.
I totally agree, and actually, what that does is that is a great segue into my next question for you guys. And I have a feeling this next question might take a little bit of time. So let's take a look here. So on the next one that says, hey, we can't have a conversation about IT governance systems without discussing frameworks. So we've heard a couple frameworks come up. You guys know, I always have this saying, framework exhaustion. There's so many frameworks out there we can choose from. And of course, you know, every framework has a specific focus that creates value for the enterprise. So for everyone out there, can you guys suggest any industry frameworks that might be well suited for a post-pandemic system? So I want to start on this with Dirk, because I think from a frameworks perspective, I think Dirk has a very unique perspective of this as being really the chief architect of COBIT. And so Dirk, let's go to you next.
So you want me to say whether there's any good frameworks around? Mm-hmm. I think COBIT is a good one.
Hey, I agree with you, man. You know, I'm a big fan of it.
COBIT-19, let's make it clear. COBIT-19 is a good framework.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Kaya. That is so funny. Just real quick, Dirk, I hate to jump in. I saw there was a news station in San Francisco or San Diego, California, and they were having a big – a huge segment on COBIT-19. And I thought, oh my gosh. And matter of fact, Dirk, you made a comment on my LinkedIn post on that. I was like, wow, they're talking about COBIT-19 in San Diego. So I thought that was kind of funny. Dirk, take it away.
Okay. So, no, the reason why, I mean, of course, I'm biased towards COBIT. That goes without saying. But if you look at one of the principles that we defined for a governance system, one principle that I think now stands out more than others is a governance system should be dynamic, and that means it should be able to adapt to changing circumstances. And the world we're living in now with the pandemic is a very it changes constantly. We have new supply chains, new ways of working, increased threats for privacy and security and what have you. And there your governance system needs to be flexible enough to adapt to these changing circumstances. And I think if you take COBIT, we built COBIT on that premise, based on that principle. And COBIT, and we'll talk about it later on during this webinar, COBIT has a mechanism built in that allows it to be tailored to changing circumstances. So I think any governance system that has this capability, that is not rigid and a one size fits all and all circumstances solution, any governance system which is flexible is more relevant than ever. And COVID is one of those. COVID 2019, Kaya.
Hey, so
Dirk, I have a question just for Dirk, if I can jump in. I'm sorry. A lot of regulators are writing, you know, long, detailed regulations that are not very flexible. What would you suggest to a regulator that needed to write regulations around governance and IT governance in organizations to enable it to be flexible and resilient rather than having this hard-coded kind of approach?
What I would do is, I think, the same approach that we took with COVID and the same approach that some other standardization bodies do is raise the level of abstraction until the up to the principle level so that you define very strong principles and tell people, look, whatever you do, whatever solution you take, you need to live by these principles. I know it's a little bit harder to check hard compliance, but I think that's the way to go. And that's what we did with COVID as well. Raise the level of abstraction so that it becomes a little bit more generic and smaller, stronger, and then leave it to the people to, and help them, of course, to implement it.
By the way, I love the design factors. I think that's a great idea. It's a great way of winnowing COVID down. So it's a great, you know, the design factors is excellent. So thank you for that.
I agree on that. And actually, I've got a couple of follow-up questions here in a second about principles and design factors. But there's a couple of folks you may want to jump in just on that last conversation. I'm thinking Alan Boardman might be a good person to jump in. Dina. Or even Ramses and Opiemi. You guys have any comments on that last segment?
Yeah, I really like Dirk's comment about raising the extraction level. So although it's not a framework, it's a law, GDPR has done exactly that. So GDPR has some very strong principles. And then beneath that, there are guidelines from the various regulators to ensure that those principles follow.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges with usage of COVID 2019 and other the preceding frameworks is the assumption that COBIT is a standard as against being a framework. So you see people looking for checklists, things to tick from the box and all of that. But it's actually about your ability to customize it. It's the tailoring that makes it very powerful. So that means that you need to make it fit for your purpose and fit for your use. And that requires that you understand the needs of your stakeholders, the business objectives, and what value actually means to the organization. So I think the design factors in COVID 2019 has actually made that simple. You know, people are able to think through what the enterprise goals are, what the strategic objectives are. And with all the changes going on now, you know, you can actually begin to question your strategic artifacts. And say your enterprise goals, you need to begin to question it. Is this still the right thing to pursue? You need to look at your new compliance risk, you know, your risk profile and all of that. So the design factor, I think, is a very powerful introduction to the governance system design today.
I agree, Opiemi. And in fact, one of the things I've been thinking about as we've been talking through this, we're talking about compliance, we're talking about performance. We heard from Turkey, we've heard Nigeria. So here's what's interesting. So I want to jump to Jordan for a second. So I'm going to jump to you, Dina, because you guys in Jordan have a pretty unique perspective, because we got a question out on the from one of the listeners said, hey, how can maturity level play a role in compliance? All right, so let's talk about Jordan, where maturity or capability level is an absolute legislative law in the country of Jordan. What are your thoughts here from you guys in Jordan on this?
Yeah, exactly, Mark. Actually, as per the regulations of the Central Bank of Jordan that were published in 2016 and updated in 2019, the Central Bank of Jordan requested the banks to adopt COBIT and achieve capability level 3, first of all, for the whole 35 processes in COBIT. And in 2019, the Central Bank requested the banks to perform the design stage of the governance system, and based on the design to set priorities for the governance and management objectives, and to achieve capability level 3 for the governance objectives and the rest of the objectives. And the banks can execute or set low priority for up to 9 objectives, management objectives. So as you mentioned, Mark, capability levels were very important indicators showing how the banks are performing in their processes and objectives. And this is very important. And we do like 2 assessments every year and report to the central bank on how the organizations are performing, how they are increasing their capability levels to achieve the required target model. Definitely, we are facing issues. And you know that achieving capability level 3, for example, for maybe around 31 processes will require resources in terms of people, money, and competencies. But in general, the financial sector is working hard to adopt that, especially with the current situation with the pandemic environment. So it's very important. It helps us to compare different processes in different environments, how they are operating, the challenges, and the success factors.
Now, that is actually, it's a really, really good perspective, because I've actually had my eye on Jordan for quite some time, because there were legal requirements to meet certain capability levels. And I thought that was impressive. And I think you guys in the country have done a really nice job of moving from COVID-5 to COVID-2019. And so I am sure Ramses is sitting in Barcelona. I'm sure, Ramses, you want to say something here. I'm going to put you on the spot. Go for it, Ramses.
All right. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, I'm really enjoying, you know, the conversation and my colleagues' points. But I was thinking on the question on screen, you know, and I'm not going to suggest any framework. So let me get a little generalist or generic point of view. But I do know for a fact over my plus 24 years career that a framework has to be, and listen to the following words. I mean, I know this is being recorded, so it's going to be great to go back to this. But it has to consider, I mean, the very pillars of integrity, leadership, competence, understanding the skills, and transparency and honesty, and of course respect. And it has to be, you know, with confidence and commitment and fairness. But all of those, this cloud of words or universe of words, for whom? I mean, for 4 pillars. I mean, for the individual, for the organization, for the shareholder, and for the board. So all of the things that we have just said, and certainly COVID-5, COVID-2019 from ISACA shines. There are many others. But again, we will, especially in this post-pandemic, these difficult, exceptional times that we are living, I mean, unless we do it with integrity, leadership, commitment, fairness, honesty, transparency, and I mean it, you know, transparency to shareholders, stakeholders, the board, the individual, you know, respect for the employee, respect for the numbers, of course. So so in my long sort of answer or my list of words, I it's out of my, not just my head, but from my heart, that a framework will only be meaningful, relevant, and insightful with this cloud of universe of words that I have just shared with you, Mark and my friends. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling Elaine has something to say about this as well. Go for it.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. On my side, I'm a great fan of COVID and COVID 2019, especially for the design of a customized INT governance system. IT now, to come back to the question, INT now encompasses the whole enterprise, and it's not limited to IT. And one point which is very important for me in COVID 2019 is the difference between INT and IT. It is definitely not the same thing. And we need to keep in mind that in the digital transformation, we aim to use information everywhere in the enterprise, and the IT is definitely not focused on the IT department. It's not completely new, but until now, the issue had been managed by the business teams by using end-user computing, what we call generally shadow IT, which presents a high level of risks in terms of privacy, continuity, which has been highlighted by the pandemic, security. And it's now highlighted, really, in the way of working, by the way of working due to the pandemic. So it's more critical than ever to govern and manage the information and related technology as part of the governance. It's, after all, it's a resource of the same kind as people, money, whatever you want. So it has to be governed by the board of directors. And of course, we need to adapt the way we govern it and not take what is written in COBIT and try to copy-paste it in the enterprise. So for me, COBIT, it's the only framework which focuses in these critical aspects.
Interesting. So that takes me to a comment that Dirk made a little bit earlier. And so you look back at a lot of frameworks, and a lot of folks here on this panel are familiar with things like ITIL, and of course on COBIT. And ITIL just went to, did a big update to ITIL 4. Of course, we had a massive update with COBIT as well. But most principals have done what I believe is the right thing, is they've started with a principles-based concept. And so COBIT identifies principles for a governance system and a governance framework. Are principles still viable today from a framework perspective? Because so my perspective is this, is I think because our environment is changing so much and we're changing so rapidly, I believe principles are very important, because they set some stakes in the ground, some ground rules on how you create and design your tailored governance system moving forward. We'll talk about tailored governance system here in just a second, but let's talk about principles. Ed, I'm going to jump out to you because I think you have some comments on this, and I'm going to follow this up with Dirk after this. Are principles still viable moving forward in a post-pandemic environment?
I'm going to say that absolutely they are, and I'm going to dovetail on what Dirk said earlier about the necessity to be dynamic and tailored to the organization. And what that means post-pandemic is we've got to get accustomed to what the new normal is. We've got to get the old mindset of this is the way we used to do it and get into the mindset of, okay, how are we going to do it now? We have to account for that ever-changing capability, and this is where those principles come in play. When we start talking about meeting shareholder need or stakeholder needs, that's still going to exist, pandemic or not. If we don't account for the changing environment within our, not only within our own organizations, but the changing environment of our suppliers, of our logistics, of our our key business partners. One of the things that came up was, okay, great, you know, we have the flexibility to adapt. We're getting ready to go back to the office. That's great for your organization, but what happens when your organization is doing business with a entity that's not going back to the office? We've already seen a lot of organizations that have started going that route of hey, you know what, work from home. So yes, I think that the principles are still viable, because we're going to have to redesign a number of ways that we do things, and that's the progress of evolution, and that's one of the things that I believe the pandemic has done is sort of forced that evolution within the organization. When we talk about the post-pandemic aspects, we're still looking at what, 7 to 19 months before they have an actual vaccine. So I mean, we are in the new normal.
I think I cannot disagree with Ed. I think the principles, and I repeat myself here, are written at such a high level that they remain valid. If you think what will be different between before pandemic, after pandemic, it's yes, there will be an economic downturn. So yes, we will have to be careful with our resources. We will have changed supply chains, changed ways of working. But I think all of that is still covered by the same principles. So if you have these strong principles like stakeholder-based, stakeholder-focused, making a clear distinction between giving direction and executing, governance and management, making sure that everybody is involved, that you can adapt to changing circumstances, these principles stand. So from that point of view, I don't think much will change. And I think our frameworks, which are based on solid principles, will stand, remain valid.
Not only do I think that they'll remain valid, I think they're going to start realizing more importance coming from them. When we take a look at the new normal, if you will, where we have a distributed workforce more so now than ever, we're going to have to track that end to end now. We're going to have to monitor that traffic and understand the flow of information. And I forgot who brought it up earlier, but the shift from information technology to information and related technologies is big, because it is no longer in our four walls. It's in X as a service. It's at Bob's house. It's at Karen's coffee shop. It's all over the place. And this is where I think like the frameworks like COVID-2019 are going to come in, because one of the guiding principles there is that it governs end to end around that information and technology.
Now, that's great. Hey, OPME down in Nigeria, I'm sure you've got a perspective on this. Go for it, man.
Yeah, I believe that principles are a very good way of ensuring that we don't lose perspective. Principles help us to be able to, have a way of still shaping and coping with changes that may come upon us. So changes may come, there are new normals, some new ideas coming up, new business models. But the principles, for example, the primary principles, the first principle in COVID-2019, which is about creating value for stakeholders, that will never change. We always have stakeholders. We always have the need to create value. And that will be, you know, the primary thing driving governance system in terms of practices, in terms of the components of the system and all of that. So the implementation of those principles may change. The emphasis on those principles may change in terms of practicing them, but the principles themselves, I believe, will endure for a long time to come.
You know, and that makes sense. And I think that's a great way to bring principles into governance systems. But, you know, we've had a lot of questions out from folks listening in here, and the industry as well is saying that principles are great, but our environment changes on a regular basis. The threat landscape changes, our company goals change, our strategies change, those kinds of things. We've talked about COBIT up to this point. What in COBIT will allow me as an organization to be able to change my governance system based on all these areas that might be changing? So Dirk, I hope you don't mind, I'm gonna put you on the spot. Does COBIT allow me to be able to modify my system based on things that are taking place in my environment?
Yes. You need more?
Yes. And so what I'm getting at is we have something called design factors.
Exactly. So the design factors, that's something, it's the new thing in COBIT 2019. Why did we do it? Two reasons, basically. We saw how people trying to implement or to adapt or adopt earlier versions of COBIT were struggling with the quite abstract language of COBIT and how to turn that into something that was tailored to their own environment. The only thing we gave them was this goals cascade thing, which if we have another webinar on that alone, was not really perfect. So people were struggling. At the same time, we noticed that scientific research confirmed that there are a number of factors that influence your governance system. And so we started to do some research and we found out that things like your strategy, organizational tactical objectives, your threat landscape, the way you use technology and so on, they can all influence how you should govern your environment. So we call that design factors. We link those to the 40 governance and management objectives, and basically based on the values
of each of these parameters, of each of these factors, your the design guide will tell you, well, you should prioritize maybe these five governance or management objectives more, and these 10 are less important. And if these parameters, if the design factors change, your priorities will change as well. So by using these design factors, you can figure out what matters most to your enterprise, and you can tailor the governance system more and better to your own needs, to the benefit of creating value from IT. So it is a little piece of help that we provided the COBIT users with to help them prioritize and tailor COBIT and make it easier to adopt for their own environments.
You know, what's interesting is we've seen this. We just heard from Jordan a few minutes ago with that says, hey, this is now legislation. Dina, it was when you guys moved from COBIT 5 to COBIT 2019, and what I'd really like to get to is, do you think that in the country of Jordan, like post-pandemic, do you think using design factors will be helpful for you? I'm kind of thinking about what you guys are seeing here in Jordan. So let's go to you, Dina, if you don't mind.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Actually, having the design phase in the early stages of adopting a governance system is very important because it helps you to set your target capability levels, to set your target model of implementation. So what happened in Jordan in 2016 and 17, we were working on COBIT 5 and we don't have that design stage. So we don't have like priority for our governance and management objectives. All the 35 governance and management objectives are equivalent. We didn't know which one is more important than the other than using the goals cascade. But having this design methodology in COBIT 2019 really helped us to set our priorities based on our strategies, on the business objectives, on my risk profile, on the current INT issues. So the end result of that tailored governance system was prioritized governance and management objectives from the most important ones to the least important ones, with the target capability levels, with the component variation. The component variation is very important part of the governance system. In addition, definitely for the focus areas. In post-pandemic environment, I see that we need to revise and review our design. We have to focus more on the risks, the pain points, the challenges we faced during the pandemic period to make sure that our new updated design will cover all the challenges. And definitely we have to look on other, what else we have. Maybe we have other regulations, the new regulations in the country. Maybe we have other laws or other requirements for the governing body after the pandemic environment. So it's good to have them all inside and integrated in my IT governance system under one umbrella, as COBIT 2019 framework suggests, and to map them as focus areas there. This will save the efforts. There will be no duplications of any efforts anywhere in the organization, and definitely we will realize the benefit out of that.
Hey, that makes sense. So what I'd like to do is, I think that was pretty interesting, especially coming from Jordan. We've got two other big areas here, and especially when we're talking about Africa and Turkey. I want to close up with two final comments on this question. Elaine, followed by Kaya. Why don't you guys finish this up, and we'll go to the next question.
Okay. On my side, in Western Africa, I see that we have a very special constraints, meaning a lack of culture, a lack of governance and management competencies, a lack of money, and so on. So it's very important to customize your IT governance system if you want it to work. And we are in a global economy, so the enterprises must be agile or dynamic. So it means that everything needs to be integrated. And I am very happy to see that in COBIT 2019, with these design factors, quite every important parameters of the enterprises are taken in consideration, which allows the enterprise to be very agile and to focus on the right issues that they are facing at the right time. and not having something which is very strict, very, very hard, and which is not flexible. This, for me, is probably one of the biggest progress which was made with COVID 2019. And I talked about competency. One other approach which was very good, as Dirk mentioned previously, COVID 5 was very great, but it was a little bit theoretical. So it was very difficult to put in practice. And with this new approach in COVID 2019, it's more pragmatic, it's more easy to put in place. And of course, it should be more easy for these countries where we lack of very huge competencies in management and governance.
Let's go to Turkey. What's your perspective?
Well, there's two things about COVID-19 I really like compared to COVID-5. One is that the capability model is very clearly defined as it was in previous versions, for COVID 4.1 in previous versions. So it's very easy to score the processes as it was the case in COVID 4.1 and earlier processes. It was very difficult to assess capability in COVID 5 in my mind. I've tried it a couple times, but I never really came up with things that I found were really adoptable. The other part of COVID-19 that I really like is there's an Excel tool that comes with the framework that allows us to implement the design factors and the focus areas. And the first time I looked at that Excel spreadsheet, I said, man, this is way complicated. No one is ever going to be able to use this. But as I used it in trainings to teach COVID-19, I found that it was a huge learning tool to get people used to the approach that things can change. A governance approach can change over time. We can change the weightings of specific processes based on what our needs are. People aren't used to thinking like that in that dynamic fashion. And using the Excel tool started people thinking like that, which is a change in the worldview in my mind, in most of the people that would attend my training. So again, Dirk, that was something when I first saw it, I didn't agree with it, but as I used it, I found it to be a very powerful tool. So well done.
Thank you.
You know, what's interesting on the tool is I do the same thing, and folks love the tool, but everybody says, well, the tool doesn't do this. The tool doesn't do this. And my response is, it's a free tool if you're an ISACA member. Again, I'm not saying this is an ISACA thing. It's a free tool. But here's the hardest part is, coming up with everybody agreeing with the inputs to what should be in the tool is the hardest part, right? You've got goals, you've got risk scenarios, you've got enterprise strategy, and you got IT pain points, or what I call IT. Those are the first four, and those are the hardest things for people to agree on, which I really think is an awesome tool. Guys, we could be on this question for the rest of the day, but I have to move on because I tell you, I think we have a pretty good question coming up next. And so this is talking about continuity plans and incident response procedures. So we're going through this global pandemic. Many organizations I talk to are saying, we are exercising our response plan now. And they're evaluating that, and they're trying to determine, hey, what is the next big risk scenario out there, and so on. You know, and it all comes down, and I always recommend to people, you want to know what the risks are to your enterprise, talk to your continuity or your disaster recovery team. They should know what the crown jewels are or the organizations. And I say crown jewels for a reason, because I'm going to bring up Ed here in a little bit, who's going to share some of his information out there. But Kaya, you just finished up the last conversation, so why don't you take us into this next piece talking about continuity plans. OPME, I want to hit you next. Then I want to look at the EU a little bit and see what you guys are thinking there out with Alan, with Ramses, and so on. So Kaya, why don't you keep going on this one?
Well, I think what I've seen is that the global pandemic and distance working has forced organizations to continually update and test their continuity plans in a way that's very organic and real life. I had an experience with a client where they were using remote desktop to ask their to access their internal systems. And one of their internal systems, I had a meeting with the client, a web meeting. I said, what are you going to do if your internal systems don't work? How are you going to keep them going? And everybody kind of looked at each other and said, well, I don't know, I'm not sure. And 3 hours later, their internal systems crashed. And they had to go and implement continuity in real time. So I'm finding that a lot of organizations, the continuity plan is becoming something their people are learning to live with. Before, it was just the responsibility of the continuity teams. Now everybody sees that continuity matters and everybody has to take personal responsibility for it. So that's one thing I've seen that's changed dramatically. In terms of incident response, I'm finding there's a lot more incidents. Systems are stopping, they're not working, there's a lot more attacks happening. And again, incident response has kind of come into this living arena where everybody is dealing with it on a real-time basis.
No, that totally makes a lot of sense. OPME, what do you guys, what do you think about this down in Nigeria? Because I know that you and I had a discussion, probably 2 weeks ago, talking about the exercising of continuity plans. What are you seeing in Nigeria from this perspective?
Okay, so I would say that COVID-19 has really helped to trigger the need to test and exercise, because without planning for it, you are now being locked down, you have to be at home, you have to ensure that businesses continue. So there's a lot of organizations finding gaps in their business continuity plan. I have a client that implemented ISO 22301, and which is a business continuity management system, which COVID 2019 also supports. And they just realized the value of what they did, before the pandemic, to see that now a lot of things are more predictable. They know what to do in times like this. Even though global pandemic was not one of the risk scenarios that they envisaged, but it's just good enough for them to say, we have something in place that we can improve on, and there's a lot of stability. So the basic principles of managing continuity, which is part of governance system, which they implemented, has come back to become a good reward for them. And there are so many other organizations who are just realizing their need for a robust business continuity management system. So awareness is growing, and I think that that will be part of the new emphasis going forward, around governance system.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, OPME, but let me remind everyone here that we call it disaster recovery plans when we mean it, IT or technology disaster recovery plans. So there's something in technology, you recover the technology, right? Mm. But we call it business continuity plans. So let me stress out, and I'm playing with words, I know, but it's the business that you want to recover. It's the business that you want the resiliency for, resiliency and robustness and solidness. So I think that's very important. And on that note, and especially again on a pandemic, in a COVID-19 and the virus thing, in very few occasions I've experienced these days, unfortunately, what happened with crisis management plans and communication plans. Very few companies, and there are some, right? But very few companies were ready to literally go out there and explain, into the public, what are we going to do? What are we doing with shareholders? It took weeks for someone, on a suit, with or without a tie, I don't care, right? But to go on public record, on a camera, on a newspaper, and going back to, hey, we have been hit. That's okay. We understand that. Now we will recover, and this is our plan. So within the business continuity plan and resiliency and incident response procedures, what happened with communication plans and crisis management plans? So I think that's instrumental for success. And also, Mark, if I may, on that note, I'm seeing companies, and that's, I would say, mandated. That's the DNA of a company in these difficult, exceptional times. They need to reinvent themselves. I would say reimagine themselves. They need to bring, not, we call it the new normal. Let me use the next normal, because another thing will happen. That's life. Its risk is inherent in life. It's not gonna be another virus, but it's gonna be another thing. So we call it new normal, I understand that, but I call it the next normal, because it's going to be another next normal, another next normal, another phase, another iteration of we society, we the world, we community, right? So so I am seeing, and I'm inviting actually companies around the world of creating new muscle, I call it, new tissue, you know, like human tissue. So actually understanding the new or the next supply chain and the new customer interactions. I mean, many industries are impacted, right? So all of that in my mind, and to your question and following my colleague's comment, I know PM was absolutely right, but this and the question that we are seeing on screen, the current global pandemic, I mean, is heavily impacted continuity plans, communication plan, crisis management plan. We need to reimagine ourselves and reinvent ourselves and creating that new body and that new context, what requires interaction planning and supply chain planning. So I think that it's a beautiful conversation, I think, Mark, but I want to hear the rest of my colleagues, but I think it's a hell of a conversation.
I really like something you just said. Why do you come up with these quotable quotes in every one of these? It's not the new normal, it's the next normal. Oh, yeah. We need to do another webinar series just to talk about that.
Anytime.
Hey, so you step back and you said, hey, based on the question we're talking about, and we're talking about continuity, and we're talking about organizations. Because most people here on this call are thinking about how do I add value to the organization. And I mentioned something earlier that Ed and I talked about before, and he calls it crown jewels. Ed, you had to explain to me what you meant by crown jewels when you were talking about continuity plans, incident response plans, those types of things. Ed, let's go to you. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're thinking on crown jewels? And I believe, if you're ready, I've got a document that you'd like for me to share.
Absolutely. If you want to go ahead and share it, because this does take a little bit of rethinking the way we approach crown jewels. So when we talk about the crown jewels, especially from an incident response, or more importantly, to Ramsey's point, preparing for the next normal, I'm going to bring up the constant normal that we struggle with when it comes to dealing with incident response and business continuity, where we're driving to protect our organization, to make sure that we're still able to operate in times of resilience. But what exactly do we need to be able to do that? So one of the things I started thinking about was the fact that we have this concept of the crown jewels and protecting the crown jewels. And a lot of times we put the overemphasis on that which is regulated, which we talked about, Dirk brought up earlier, that governance has gotten lumped in with GRC, so governance, risk, and compliance. So we focus on things like credit card data, protected health information. And really, when you started thinking about it, when I started looking at it, I was like, okay, for me to be able to operate as a business, I need certain things, yes. But you have your major systems, and then you have your support systems. And if that support system's broken, if I'm missing something along the way, then guess what? I'm not able to operate. So what I ended up doing was thinking about it in a abstract form where I'm looking across what are the objectives and goals from both senior management at the enterprise level, but as well as management at the business layer, understanding the key business processes, the information flow between systems. And when I use the term systems, I'm meaning people, processes, and technologies downstream that support back up. And what we ended up doing was creating a traceability matrix from the system where we could actually identify that if a component was damaged, degraded, or unavailable, what it had the impact on upstream to be able to meet those goals and objectives. A lot of the times we say crown jewels, but we get focused and we zero in on one component, whether that's compliance-based or intellectual property. But we don't think about the fact that when we say crown jewels, it's plural. It's from the beginning considering multiple systems that have to be taken into account.
Oh, that totally makes sense. So anybody have any comments or questions on this one? For anybody out there listening, if you'd like a copy of this document, you can take a screenshot of this right here, or you can chat with Ed directly out on the chat window, and he can send this to you guys directly as well. Great. Hey, I think that's really cool, because if you think about from a continuity perspective, that's what we're trying to do. And I believe what Ed just really did was told us what's important to the business. And that goes back to something that I mentioned right at the beginning of this webinar that Alan Boardman said, know what your critical business objectives are on this. So I think that's very important. Guys, I need to keep moving on. But what I want to do to finish up this question, folks are always interested in different standards and so on that could help them with continuity, especially moving forward. So are there any suggestions that you might have for our listeners on where to look for good practices when it comes to continuity and incident management in terms of, say, any ISO, NIST, those kinds of things out there? Ramsey, out in Jordan, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Yeah, actually, Mark, for business continuity and incident management, there is many standards and also frameworks available. I suggest ISO 22301 for business continuity management is a very good reference in this area. In addition to that, if we talked about COVID and about governance, and about the alignment between COVID and other standards, such as cybersecurity, maybe resilience programs. And I believe the NIST core security framework, especially it has many domains through its life cycle, such as detect, protect, respond, recover. And in particular, in the respond function, if we go to particular categories, such as incident analysis, communication, improvement, mitigations, and response planning are detailed in this category within the NIST CSF. So I believe this is both are an excellent reference for enterprises to maintain confidentiality, integrity, availability of their data, and secure the people and process and technology around it.
Hey, Elaine, over to you. What are you guys seeing in Ivory Coast on this?
Well, in Ivory Coast, it's very simple. People are very fan of ISO standards. So ISO 27001 and ISO 27002, a little bit ISO 27005 about risks. And very few, well, we didn't care about continuity, since business continuity was not at, one of the top priorities. So starting now with ISO 22301. But my preferred framework for that is definitely NIST CSF, because it's the most complete framework available today on the cyber risk and cyber security. It consolidates the knowledge of and controls of all the other frameworks on the market, ISO 27001, COBIT, CIS, CSC, ISAR, and my preferred one is NIST CSF. And on top of that, I'd say that ISO standards are very expensive, because you pay a lot to buy each of these standards. And on top of that, NIST is completely free. So I don't understand why it's not implemented, it's not used in our French-speaking countries. Again, maybe it's a war, because stupid war, because between Europe and Africa and the other part of the world, which is America. But it's really stupid, because it's really one of the best standards. And the combination of NIST and NIST CSF and COBIT is definitely the best thing you can put in place. This is my point of view.
You know, I don't disagree with you. You know, here's one of the interesting things is most organizations, they are struggling between, do we go the ISO path, we do the NIST path, and people say, well, NIST is North America, ISO is more international. But one of the things I like about NIST, everything is free. You can get it all for free, which I really like on that. So, hey, guys, I really like the conversation we had on the global pandemic and looking at continuity plans, but we really need to move on, because I've got another question here I think is really, really important, because you hear this next term everywhere. You hear digital transformation everywhere. We've seen a significant increase in these initiatives, as well as hearing the buzzword out there. So what do you guys think? This current global pandemic, has that changed the strategy of many organizations? Because everybody's talking about the app that tracks your privacy, the app that might violate cybersecurity, the app that will help us save the world, right? But digital transformation, we've seen this out there. And I think that we have a couple of folks out on this call who have a unique perspective on this. And I know Ramses, I know you've got some comments on this, and I'm going to follow this up with Ed right after you give your answer, Ramses. Go for it.
Excellent. Thank you, Mark. Yeah, very quick. Absolutely. I mean, I've seen different names for that. Digital transformation, digital disruption. Well, I said it on cybersecurity last week, and I'm going to say it again. The name of the game, especially now after the pandemic times, is the name of the game is radical innovation, doing different things differently. It is time to start talking not just about tactics, but also strategy and the cause-effect relationship on strategy long-term, but how are we going to meet that goal, you know? So the beautiful conversation on strategy and tactics, and again, radical innovation being the name of the game, doing different things differently. And I'm following my previous answer is, you need the companies around the world, they need to plan for a certain uncertainty. If COVID-19 has, the virus has shown us something is expect the unexpected. And that's, again, a beautiful conversation. Expect the unexpected. Plan for a certainty. Difficult as it is? Well, yes, I just put it on the chat. Is it difficult? Yes, it is. Is it impossible? No, I think it's not. I mean, and I'm being white in my answer, meaning, I mean, expect the unexpected is probably a good topic, right? But you need to chart the path to that next normal that I was mentioning, not just the new normal, but charting the path, knowing, I mean, your strategy. If you need to realign toward goals or reinventing yourself, well, how many companies and industries are exactly doing that? So if I'm going to survive, the dictionary says that resiliency is the capacity to endure. That's the exact definition of the dictionary for resiliency, right? So that's what we're talking here, the capacity to survive to these difficult times, and then that create that new journey, that new path. Actually, sometimes digital transformation or digital disruption is copied with the journey into the cloud, the journey into the future. All right, let's embrace all that. Let's put it all together. But certainly, it is time for chief executive officers, chief transformation officers, chief innovation officers, all of the executives to chart the new path. And actually, let me close with the following, Mark, if I may. I mean, my answer, I mean, you know, CIO, everybody is thinking, all right, chief information officer. What happened with chief innovation officer? Okay, CTO, everybody in this call is thinking about chief technology officer, correct. But what happened with chief transformation officer, you know? So, yes, I'm playing again with words, but it's food for thought. It's for our plus 100 people attending and a lot more on demand as it is being recorded. I think that planning for uncertainty, strategy and tactics, that relationship is very important. So I wanted to say that, Mark. Yeah.
Very good. Hey, Ed, I'm going to jump to you real quick because I need to move on to the next question. So, Ed, any thoughts on that one?
Absolutely, I have thoughts. I have lots of thoughts. And we'll start with Ramsey's comment about where did the chief technology, the chief transformation officer go? For most organizations, they're finding out that their chief transformation officer is, in fact, COVID-19. It's forcing them to go through. And I believe that historically what we are seeing now is that we've hit a event horizon moment that is going to change the way that we're going to do business, not just now or in the next normal, but in perpetuity. We're going to have to evolve and go through. Many organizations are learning across the globe and very painfully in some cases that they've needed to transform for quite some time. We're at a point now where there is no going back to the way that we've done things previously. And if an organization's leadership believes that they're going to be able to pick right up where they left off of pre-pandemic, then they're fooling themselves. I think that leadership has to be able to adjust and adapt to what that new normal, or to quote Ramses, the next normal is going to be.
The next normal. And speaking of the next, you guys know we're about 16 minutes to go, so I've got to go to the next question. Thank you, everybody, for that. And I think this one's pretty significant. Your company has just announced that it's going completely virtual, something we heard from Ramses two webinars ago. He gave us some statistics on companies going back to the new normal or how you might be operating in the future. So what changes to your IT governance systems would you recommend when going to the new normal or the other normal out there? So I'm going to call out Veronica. Veronica's been very patient because she's our auditor and she knows a lot about this kind of stuff. Veronica, I'm going to jump to you next. Can you walk us through your thoughts here?
Thank you, Mark. So I'll actually refer to the COVID-2019 framework. And I recommend in brief that organizations put much attention on the key focus areas, particularly cybersecurity and cloud computing. Basically that. Over to you, Mark. You're mute.
Oh, I am on mute. New. I am new at this. I'm the new guy here. Kaya, let's go to you next.
I think the biggest change is that it's becoming much more decentralized, and workers, every individual needs to be empowered to both introduce and implement new solutions, as well as identify governance needs and requirements. It's not something that's good. You know, I used to say that for governance to be successful, it needs to be top down. Having upper management support is really critical, but having everybody's participation is really important. There's no limit on where a good idea can come from. Even the guy cleaning, the janitor cleaning the building can come up with a good idea, can introduce something. And I think organizations that are successful will be the ones that use the power of their individuals and allow them to introduce new initiatives and to review them and address them in a more transparent fashion and in a much more fast, quick, and efficient fashion.
No, that makes total sense. So this question is pretty basic, and I want to run out to the panel. Anybody else here on the panel have any suggestions on this one? I think we've covered most of the key points. If not, I'm going to move to auditing next because I want you to stay tuned. Veronica, don't leave us yet because I think you're coming up next. Anybody have any extra things you want to say on this one?
Mark, very quickly, it's Alan. I'm just going to jump in here. So the new normal, you know, your data is in a virtual environment. Your data is potentially everywhere. So, you know, the data governance, information governance aspect becomes absolutely vital. So, you know, it may have been important before, but guess what? It's just moved up a couple of pegs. So yeah, data governance, information governance, you know, knowing where your most critical data is, structured, unstructured data, is absolute paramount to managing your business.
You stole my thunder, Alan. That's exactly where I was going to go with that, is the focus needs to be on the data and how that flows within the new network environment.
You got it. So let's tell you guys what, let's move on. Let's talk about auditing next. So I think this is a cool one. So you talk new normal. What suggestions would you have for an enterprise's assurance or audit function? Because I think a lot of things we're disrupting, not just how workers work and how we administer IT services, but how we ensure that we are conforming to rules. So what I'd like to do, Veronica, let's go back to you, because I think you may have some thoughts on how we do that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mark. My recommendations will be that auditors should now provide assurance based on the newly documented processes, because I'm sure we've had some new changes and we are currently implementing new best practices and so forth. So your assurance should be based on the newly implemented processes. And of course, they should also ensure that organizations have tailored governance systems that are frequently updated, because the current changes have invoked quite a number of things. Also to put into consideration of your robust IT risk management framework that is in place currently. There's a research risk that was done by PwC recently, and they were trying to discuss about the three waves of responding to the crisis, apparently. And they were mentioning about the three waves that all organizations are going to go through. They describe the immediate term that involved mobilization so that you ensure that all your staff are safe where they are, and also establishing response structures. And I'm sure most organizations have gone through that wave. And then the medium wave, where I believe we are right now, that calls for stabilization to develop tactical responses to the challenges and also finding ways of navigating through the crisis. They also talk about the long-term plan, the long-term wave, of which it's some of us is where we are right now, and then other organizations have already reached that have asked their staff designing strategies in to emerge stronger even after the COVID.
Did I just lose Veronica? Okay.
Yes.
Hey, Veronica, we got you. We're frozen. So what I'm going to do is, hey, Alan Boardman, I'm going to move to you next because I think you have something you'd like to share with us. And let me do this for you, if you don't mind. Alan shared a slide with me earlier, so I'm going to put this up. Alan, we'll go to you next. Can you talk us through this piece, please?
Yeah, so Mark, just from a audit perspective, I mean, these are some quick wins to understand whether you've got an effective governance model in place. And this looks at risk specifically, but governance isn't just about risk. So, you know, looking at some of those key governance building blocks to understand whether your organization has these in place. So the first one there is the governance operating model, really understanding clarity around ownership responsibilities, committees and forums, important part of that. So it's not just about the people. But obviously people have core part of that as well. And then ensuring that you've got those core documents in place. So the control documents, policy standards, you know, the things we come to love as auditors or risk professionals. And then finally, that you have measurement and reporting in place. So, these are the operational and governance metrics and also the processes for doing that regular assurance and independent monitoring. So this aligns to COVID. I mean, it's a slightly different lens, but these are some quick wins that I would suggest that your auditors and insurance professionals should be looking at.
You know, I like this. And Alan, one of the things that you mentioned, you were talking about the different committees and the different forums. And I think one of the things that a lot of organizations do is they say, well, the governing body is the board of directors. But what they don't realize is that there are multiple governing bodies throughout the organization. And those are the committees and the forums. And they're setting guidelines. They're setting rules. And they're making the lane at which people should be operating in. I think that's a really, really important part. And that's really consistent with some of the things we say in organizational structures, information on the COVID side as well. Nice job. That's excellent. Okay, so OPME, I'm going to move to you next. So OPME also has a document you'd like to share. So let me move this over here. OPME, can you tell us a little bit about this one right here? Hopefully you guys can see that. All right.
All right. Okay, thank you, Mark. Right, I just want to share this document, you know, talking about governance questions, you know, whether you want to get an assurance around whether your governance system is working or not. These are timeless principles that can be adopted. You know, the ability to ask the right questions, I think, is one of the most important competencies that professionals need to develop at this time. And it's adopted from VAL IT framework. You know, the four major questions around are we doing the right thing? You know, it's very important to do the right things, not just the good things. You know? So because the enemy of the right is the good. We need to ensure that we do the right things. So what are the frameworks or the guidance that we can use to be able to answer that question? So you have strategic questions that can be answered through the 13 enterprise goals from COBIT, the 13 alignment goals. You can use that to answer some of the questions around, are we doing the right things? And then the good practices and execution. Are we doing them the right way? Good practices are as good as those who practice them. You can have COBIT, you can have ISO, you can have NIST, but if you are not applying them correctly, you are not going to get the value from it. So you have some 231 governance and management practices, over 1,000 governance and management activities that you can adapt and adopt and tailor to the needs of your organization. So you have guidance around governance activities, around strategic activities, APO, tactical activities, BAI, operational activities, DSS, and assurance activities, you know, which you can get from COVID 2019. And also the question around, are we getting them done well? So, you know, can we improve? Are there opportunities for improvement? Are there non-conformity in the system? So you can use this COVID performance management framework or COVID performance model to answer this question. And then the final question, are we getting the benefits? Which is the whole essence of everything we are doing, is to get value for the organization. So COBIT 2019 provides metrics, goals and metrics that you can use to create KPIs, lag indicators, lead indicators, to be able to ensure that your efforts are in the right direction and you are going to have an organization that is resilient, that can be sustained, and that is supported by the use of information and technology. So you have some other publications apart from COBIT 2019, four core publications like ISO 38500 series. Those ones are not free, of course, but COBIT 2019 introduction and methodology, governance and management objectives. These two are free to members and non-members of ISACA. And the other ones, if you're not a member of ISACA, which I encourage you to join, you may have to pay something to be able to have access to it. So this is just to help those who are getting started in the journey to have the way to start the journey. Thank you.
Hey, Veronica, we lost you for a second. Do you you have any other statements you want to follow up? Because I'm going to have to move to everybody's closing comments next. Go for it, Veronica.
Sorry about that, Alia. Yes, I wanted to mention this. It would be vital for the auditors in the audience as they are carrying out their review to ensure that they have a tailored governance system that is updated frequently because you are never done with implementing IT governance. It's a gradual process. To also consider that they are complying with the regulations. Well, in Kenya, we don't have like a regulation for implementing specific frameworks like COBIT 2019, but ensure you're complying with the available regulations. And also ensure cybersecurity audits are carried out appropriately, and also review of your business continuity plans. I'll also mention this last one thing, also adopt remote auditing practices. It's not a one fit, like a one fit for all or one size fits all, but it is here to stay. So if you really want to assess your governance systems, how it will work appropriately, ensure you also respond to the crisis in the same way. Thank you. Back to you, Mark.
Hey, that's great, great feedback on that. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I've got to move on. You guys know it's good. Hang in there. Give us just a couple of extra minutes because we're going to do a round table and we're going to get some final thoughts from every expert out there for you guys. So first, let's start with Ramses. Ramses, what's your thinking here to close this out? Ramses, let's go to Alan. Alan Boardman, you ready? Go, Alan. Let's do it. Oh, there you go.
There you go. There you go. Go ahead.
Ramses, we'll start with you.
Oh, all right. We lost you for. I'm assuming that you were talking to me, but we lost you for some seconds. Anyway, in any case,
I'm in Kansas. My internet is not that great.
No, I'm going to be quick because I want to hear my colleagues, but we have had three webinars, three fantastic weeks, massive content. I learned a lot, and I know that I can speak a lot, but I'm going to finish my comment with three verbs. That's my invitation to everyone who is listening, who has listened to us in the previous weeks, to restart, rebuild, and accelerate. In cybersecurity, privacy, governance, in a post-pandemic or pandemic epoch that we're living, restart, rebuild, and once this is done, boom, let's accelerate. Three verbs for three fantastic webinars. Mark, it was a pleasure to be with you and with the rest of my colleagues that I want to hear right now. Thank you very much.
This has been great. Alan, let's go to you.
So I'll be very quick. My three things are, look for those innovative opportunities for governance. Start with something small and scale. The second one is invest in people again. But what a wonderful opportunity to do, some of the COVID courses, some of the, C-Guide certification. You should be looking at investing in your people, but investing in yourself. And then finally, I said on the previous one, be nice to people, be nice to yourself as well.
That's perfect. I love that. That was a great one. And I was, you notice I didn't say it when we started because I wanted you to say it again because it sounds better coming from you. Ramsey out in Jordan, let's hear you.
Yeah. Actually, Mark, I have a recommendation to have one program for governance, cybersecurity, data privacy, and information security as well. This will reduce the cost, accelerate time toward compliance, and avoid redundancy, especially now the budget for many enterprises is very critical, and everybody is trying to reduce the cost. And so having a complete comprehensive roadmap is a great idea. So I urge everybody to do this alignment between these frameworks and standards and to get the maximum benefit. Thank you all again.
You got it. Veronica, let's go to you in Kenya.
Thank you, Mark. I have three. So right now, business leaders, professionals, and so forth, they should be aware of the new realities that the business are in right now. So assemble the right stakeholders and verify their support. This will enable you to have a better understanding of all your services and ensure transparency and accountability, because that will be key going forward. I also cannot stop emphasizing on considering the culture. Consider the culture as you're trying to implement your governance system. This is something that you really have to consider going forward. And then lastly, regardless of your role or your title in a company, getting your decision makers to see the value of IT governance requires you to speak the language they really understand. Because remember, IT governance is a necessity and it will always be a necessity. And our job as IT assurance professionals is to explain to the right people at the right time in the right way to ensure that the business value is attained. So continuously monitor your governance systems for adjustments. Thank you.
Hey, that's excellent, excellent advice. Kaya, let's go to Turkey next.
I think the first thing to do is to identify and communicate what the organization's core business is. Second thing is enabling people in the organization to propose ways of addressing that. And the third thing is to measure everything, measure the way things are done, measure how they're done after innovations are being implemented. Feel free to throw stuff that doesn't work in the trash, and by all means, take stuff that does work and communicate it broadly across the enterprise so other people can use that innovation.
Makes a lot of sense. Ed, let's go back to the US. What do you say?
So from my side, what my top suggestions are gonna be is number one, from a post-pandemic, go back to looking at tailoring your enterprise and do a lessons learned. Find out what went right and what went sideways. You wanna recreate those wins and prevent yourself from reliving the past. Following that, understand that what was is no more. We have to understand and accept that the threat landscape has dramatically changed. And with that, so has our risk profile. We need to recalibrate to the I'm looking at Ramsey's when I say this, the next normal. Finally, as I have previously mentioned, you know, follow the data, understand where the data is going, where that information is flowing through now. As we brought on more systems and had to accelerate to support a mobile and remote workforce, that data is in a lot of different places. It was brought up previously that you know, the home user may be putting documents on Google or OneDrive or what have you. Find out where that data is and understand the implications that it's going to have. And again, this comes back to what I initially said with be prepared to be able to defend the decisions that you've made during the pandemic.
You got it. Opiemi in Nigeria, what say you?
Yeah, I would like to say that everything you need to know is in a book. Ramsey said last week, you know, the book has been written. So go to ISACA website, download COVID. Don't just download it, make sure that you read it. Don't just assume that you understand it. Probably try to take a test to validate your understanding. My second recommendation would be for you to analyze your environment, your organizational context, and ask yourself, you know, what do we need to stop doing? Because that's very important. Not just the new things that you want to do, what are the things that you need to stop doing? Because that might be an opportunity for value creation. And then what else do you need to do more of at this time? And then finally, while you are leveraging the frameworks, leveraging all the standards, it's important for you to understand that customization and prioritization is the key to the game. You must understand that context matters, customize to the context of your organization, and learn to prioritize. Not everything is of equal importance. You know, Pareto's rule should come to mind. 20% of your efforts will result in 80% of your results. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Elaine, let's go to the Ivory Coast. What do you say over there, Elaine?
Okay, my three tips are very simple. First of all, think holistically. It means that IT is everywhere in the enterprise, and it's not definitely an IT technological subject. So think holistically. So risks are everywhere, and it means that IT should be the center of the issues for which the board of directors is accountable. Second one, as Ramses said, the books are already written. So don't try to reinvent the wheel. Leverage on sound frameworks such as COBIT, NIST. Never try to copy-paste what is written in these books. You could kill your company. So adapt this generic knowledge to the specific case of your organization. And maybe the most important one, focus on people. IT is not a technical subject. So it's a transversal subject, and puts a focus on awareness training for all your staff. It's all about it's all about behaviors, skills, and competencies. This is the first point. IT is finally just a tool to enable the business people to create value. So don't put IT on the top of everything. IT is important, and focus on people. Thank you, Mark.
Dina, to you and Jordan, then we'll follow up with Dirk.
Yeah, three tips, Mark. The first tip is to survive in pandemic environment and post-pandemic, our organization should continue to provide value and create benefits for our stakeholders. I encourage the organizations to review their IT governance system design and include cybersecurity and privacy as focus areas in that design. They are the most effective and sensitive areas in the post-pandemic environment. Tip number two, focus on culture, ethics, and behavior components or enablers in the new tailored governance system. This component is now essential after the changes in the working environment and the habits due to the pandemic environment. Tip number three, governance in crisis and after crisis is very critical and important. The crisis revealed the inherent risk among different domains in our organization. It revealed the limitation in our organization, the untouched capabilities of the IT governance. So based on that, consider proper setting and maintenance for the governance system to be enhanced post on the pandemic environment where we have experienced our challenges, strengths, weaknesses, and opportunities. Thank you, Mark, and thank you, everyone.
Good stuff, Dina. Dirk, let's close it up with you. What do you think?
A lot has already been said, so I'll be short. One, realize that there is a proven positive correlation between good governance and the performance of your enterprise as a whole. Two, there are solid frameworks around, well, at least one, solid, agnostic of disruptive events that we know now, and agnostic to the buzzword of the day, whether it's DevOps or whether it's digital transformation or whatever. A solid framework can deal with all of that. And the third one, don't be too much intimidated by all the buzzword generators that claim that your governance system is no longer valid, that governance is obsolete. They are wrong. A good governance system is always needed, and we have one at our hands, and it's free or very cheap and easy to use. Thank you.
All right, guys. Thank you very much. As you expected, everybody out there knew we would not finish this thing in an hour and a half. But what we just did is we finished our capstone of three awesome webinars. We started with privacy, cybersecurity, and we just finished up with IT governance systems. Ladies and gentlemen, I know we did not get to every one of your questions. Please, you have the email addresses of every one of the experts on this panel. You can reach out to them privately, and I totally appreciate you guys coming in here. Also, I want to say a special thanks to Karen Covington Yao, who's been the support on the back end for everything we've done over the last three webinars. A couple of questions have come up about what is next. Stay tuned. Actually, I have a follow-up call with all these experts here in just a few minutes. I don't think this panel is done, but I don't know what the next step is. So keep in touch. Keep an eye on every one of the experts that you saw on this webinar series, because you never know what's coming up next. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your kind attention to our panelists. I know you guys have a day job as well as doing this basically free webinar. And we really appreciate you sharing your knowledge with all of the users out there. Folks, you can find out more information out there. I do have a couple of sites. I'll post those out on my social media as well as other people as well. I am posting what we call the highlight reels out on my YouTube site, and you can find that YouTube site. I'm also posting the unedited versions out on markthomasonline.com. That's not an advertisement. That's just where you can find this information. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining. And to the panelists, I thank you, humbly thank you for your kind information and spending time out there. Everybody, thanks for joining. We'll see you on the next thing we come up with.